I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press. And good morning. Welcome to this edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast, a duo today in the holiday post-4th of July tradition. Bob and I will handle the sports news today. We do this show every Monday and Friday, and glad to have you joining us today, and hope you're having a great holiday and going into the weekend. It's going to be very exciting stuff with the World Cup and many other things, but we'll begin today talking, as we have been talking all week, about the continued head-scratching of LeBron James's move to Los Angeles. Now, that in and of itself isn't a mystery. I think everybody thought that that was coming, and everybody now. In fact, I find, Bob, it's like it already feels natural. Of course, LeBron. Right. I've already forgotten him in Cleveland.
I won't go quite that far, but I agree with you that it all seems as the logical end to the story that we had been discussing all season long.
But my larger question was, and the part that has changed in this narrative, is that it's looking more and more like it's going to be LeBron James and, once again, a bunch of other guys. Maybe these other guys are a little bit more talented in certain areas than the other guys that he had in Cleveland. But remember, the other guys in Cleveland did include Kevin Love, who's a pretty good player who only looks, if you put Kevin Love on somebody else's team, he'd look a lot better than in the shadow of LeBron James. The Lakers don't have any other superstars, but they did add Lance Stephenson, JaVale McGee, Rajon Rondo. Now there's talk that Lonzo Ball may be trying to stay with the team by making up injuries. What's going on with the rest of the squad?
Well, I have to give credit where credit is due. There is a theory that has been put forth by, I'll name names, Ramona Shelbourne and Brian Windhorst of ESPN, that the strategy, and it is a strategy, if you buy this story, that LeBron and Magic, I was going to call him EJ as if I was like a buddy-buddy, LeBron and Magic have decided that they're going to construct a team that will be a different type of a team than the ones that it's counterintuitive thinking. You and I and everybody in the world assumes that he needs to be and wants to be surrounded by shooters. That's the way it's been. That's the way that was the goal, that he needs to have shooters he can pass to, create things happening for everybody else. The new theory is that he's going to become more of a post-up guy, a finisher, and is looking for playmakers to play with, hence Rajon Rondo. I don't know that I'd ever classify Lance Stephenson as a playmaker. I don't know what I'd classify him as, but I know I don't need him on my team. But and JaVale McGee, of course, is a whole other matter entirely. But JaVale McGee. But that's the theory. So I don't know if I buy it at all, Mitch. I
read that same article, and an article on ESPN.com doth not a plan make, for an NBA team. I think what I accept more is that LeBron James has that meeting that he had with Magic Johnson, which took place at, I love that it took place at LeBron's home in Los Angeles.
James, yes.
Yeah, but not at, he's just joining a team. He's already having meetings at his home in Los Angeles. Most people, you and I have been interviewed by other places over the course of our careers when we've gone to take a job someplace. And, they fly you in, they put you up at a hotel, you meet with them. LeBron is joining another team and he's inviting the guy over. Come on over to one of my two houses already in your market and we can sit and meet and talk about our team together. And I think their strategy is, I'm here, I'm being LeBron James, for the long run. I'm here at least 3 years, four if I want to be here. I don't have to win in 2018-19 for this to have been a worthwhile move for me. I'd rather win build in 2018-19 and win in 1920, 2021, and 21-22 if we can set things up that way. And so all these players that they're signing are 1 year deals.
1 year.
They're all going to be gone next year. So next year, with a big opening in free agency and the possibility of getting Kawhi Leonard without having to trade away anything, or other players who might join, gives them the chance for LeBron to play with. It's curious. I'm kind of curious to see how he plays with a Lance Stephenson. Rondo, to me, is such a head case. I don't know why anybody would want him on the team. And I read in that same ESPN story, they like having Rondo as a veteran presence to help guide the young people. Would you let Rajon Rondo guide anybody with his mentality and his approach to the game? Is that who you really want? But I would like to see how he fits in with some of these guys who can make their own shots.
Yeah, that's true. I'm having a hard time buying into that theory that was espoused there. So I think what you were talking about makes a lot more sense to me. They're not totally bereft. I think they have some decent young talent in Kuzma, certainly. And of course, I was going to say in Randall, but bye bye Randall. But Kuzma certainly, and Ingram. What can I say?
Are they better defensively than the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I don't think so. We don't know what, we need to see them on the court, number one. Luke Walton's got a coaching job to do, and I know everybody's going to say, well, there's no coach, there's no GM, there's only LeBron. But really there is, and it's going to be a real challenging to put these pieces together, that's for sure. And we're all just sitting around waiting to see how they're going to do this. But I buy your theory that he's thinking very definitely long haul, and these 1 year contracts are really, to me, that's all we need to know about what the plan is.
I mean, yeah, I understand the thinking that LeBron James's game is going to have to change over the course of this contract if he slows down like other human beings, although there's no definitive proof that LeBron James is actually a human being, because the way that he's been playing.
Cyborg,
yeah, he may be made of something different. And maybe he wants to last longer by moving into that Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant mode of, okay, I'm not taking six guys with me to the basket as I drive from 30 feet out every single play and get hacked and all the rest of it. I want to back in and save myself, become a better jump shooter and all the rest of it. It's hard for me to believe that he's going to do that overnight. He's still LeBron James. They're still going to be counting. Every time he gets the ball at the top of the key, they're going to figure he's the guy who's going to make something happen and not somebody else. But these are pieces on a board, Bob. These are pieces, pieces, pieces. And at any moment over the course of the summer, and we need to get used to this, that this is not going to wrap up quickly. LeBron James spoiled us by doing this in 24 hours. But the rest of the thing, Kawhi Leonard doesn't have to do anything until training camp. If he wants to force the San Antonio Spurs are probably not even going to see him until training camp, right? Just hanging out in Los Angeles, hiding from everybody. So they don't know what they got with him. And training camp is September. So we could be sitting with this, but they've got all these single pieces, single pieces, single pieces. And if they wanted to package them together to send to anybody, these guys are attractive from the old salary cap thing, expiring contracts.
Yeah,
they're done
right after
the year. Same reason that they were attractive to the Lakers means that they can be attractive to somebody else.
That's true. The expiring contract thing, one of the great phenomena of our time is that idea, how valuable that can be in any kind of a trade discussion at any given point in time. Yeah, it's once again, the fact, I just marvel at the fact that we are having this conversation at all, that we are having so many conversations about this league when the next serious ball will be bounced in October. And it speaks to how far it's come. I'm thinking back to the first summer after my first year on the beat, which was the summer of 1970, and there was one All-Star game that mattered. There was one postseason competition that was the Kutcher's game, the Stokes game at Kutcher's Country Club in Monticello, New York, and there was nothing west of the state of New York that mattered. There was truly off season. Everybody was home. There was no discussion of basketball. It wasn't in anybody's thinking. And think about how it has dominated the conversation in the last six weeks. Post NFL draft, which is another story, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Post NFL draft. Now we turn the torches passed to the NBA, the NBA draft, and now the NBA free agency, and LeBron towering over the world, and. It's just standing back and taking it all in,
Well, it's interesting that you bring up that draft thing, because when that happens and when we are all NFL all the time and we lament, those of us who have covered sports when it was just covering sports and see the difference, there's like I bet Roger Goodell is enjoying all of this and he's steered all of this and making us all talk about the NFL all the time is exactly what they want. Well, Adam Silver, who just presents as a much nicer guy and he's more genial, and he is, and having met both of them and talked to both of them, he's a nicer guy, he's easier to get along with, but he has to be enjoying the same thing. He has to love the fact that people are talking about the NBA when no balls are being dribbled. Except, I mean, the Summer League stuff. Some of these Summer League games are sold out. They have better attendance at the Summer League than they certainly do for the Pistons here in town for the regular season. And you know, they love to watch because it's all offense, and they love to watch monster dunks, and they play out in Vegas and places like that. And so he has to enjoy the fact that the NBA has become a summer soap opera. And this is very similar to what soccer is in Europe now. Guys just jumping teams and wanting to play with particular places and money being huge. And what we talk about now in the NBA is so much different, Bob, than not just 30 years ago, but even 10 years ago, before LeBron started all this. Who wants to play with who? Like, I'm hearing that Kyrie Irving wants to play with Jimmy Butler, and so maybe they want to get out of he wants to get out of Boston and go play. So, whoever thought that that stuff would matter, you know, who you want to play with? But now it does. Now it's and Kawhi Leonard is a perfect example of it. He's under contract, and all we talk about is where he's going to go.
That's why I love it when the old timers will say, well, you know, Larry and Magic never did this, and Oscar never did this, and they didn't have the opportunity. Who knows what they would have done? Do you think Larry and Magic, given the opportunity, might not have won, you know, at some point said, hey, what do you think? I mean, they were such a mutual admiration society, and it would have worked so beautifully together. And that when they finally got to play with the Olympics, and unfortunately Larry was shot and barely could walk, and it didn't have much to give, you know, at all. But God, they would have. Who knows what would have happened if these people had the opportunity? Or how about if the 28-year-old Bill Russell was a free agent in 1962?
Yeah.
And under the dollars of the day, you know, he would have been worth, you know, $50 million today.
But you know what? So much different. These guys, and the guys you're talking about, they grew up in their particular areas. They went to college in their particular zone. They played for their particular team. Even going back to Magic and Bird, you know, Bird in Indiana, Boston, done. Magic Johnson, Michigan, Michigan State, L.A., done.
So
they had three stops, the high school place, the college place, and the professional place. They didn't grow up with the AAU stuff where they all played with one another and everybody knew one another from when they were 10 years old and they were in the NBA by the time they were 19 years old, and they were manipulating themselves around by the time they were 22 years old, you know, or Kyrie Irving, you know, 25 or whatever. So this whole business about, well, I'm going to play with this guy, and he's my boy from when I grew up here. There wasn't that familiarity. So I don't know if they would have wanted to mesh or manipulate as much as, like, Larry Bird got used to his guys in Boston. You know, he got used to McHale and Parrish and all those guys around him, and those guys became his guys. And Magic got used to all the guys that he played with in L.A., but the NBA guys, they're already, you know, they're one and done at college, so they don't play with anybody a long period of time there. High school is just a joke for them because they're really just there to play AAU ball where they play with everybody. So everyone's a citizen of the world. You know what I'm, you know,
yeah,
what I'm getting
at? Yeah, and you know what's lacking here? There's the L word, loyalty. They don't develop a loyalty at all. Whereas Bird and Magic in those days, they had a loyalty to both the school. It was about school. For both of them, it's about school, never about AAU. Larry never heard those three letters in succession in his life.
Right.
It wasn't the way he spent his summers, nor, as far as I know, was Magic. They predates the AAU thing. In fact, even Michael, to the best of my knowledge, was not an AAU pup at all. Michael was still a high school phenomenon.
Right, so teammates means the guys you play with. But now teammates is the guys you hang with, the guys you did your summers with. And the notion that you can manipulate your own team, which was, you know, the can was exploded by LeBron James going to Miami and all that, but now it's de rigueur. It's absolutely normal now for guys to sort of manipulate it and say, no, I want to play here. And the owners have to take some culpability in this too, because now with the salary cap being the way that it is, they do trade, you know, favorite sons. on the last year of their contract to get rid of it or to dump it out because it, and where's the loyalty there? Mm-hmm. So loyalty in sports and all professional leagues, of course, is a joke of what it used to be. The famous North Dallas 40 line. Every time I call it a sport, you call it a business. Every time I call it a business, you call it a sport. That goes on in all of this stuff. But we really are in such a different age that we have taken, and I think even more than LeBron James, I think Kawhi Leonard exemplifies that. The fact that we're talking about now he wants, there's some buzz that he would prefer to go to the Clippers, and the sentence "I would prefer to go" has nothing to do, or should have nothing to do, with Kawhi Leonard, a player under contract to a team for another season where he's been his whole career, and yet it's sort of like this given that, well, he's going to force somebody's hand and he's going to end up someplace else. I just don't know if can you actually see him playing with San Antonio? I mean, the doors seem to be closing in a lot of
areas.
It's
hard to imagine. I mean, and you know, unless there's some big heart to heart that he has with Pop, and they settle it out, and does he need it with Pop, or does he need it with other members of his team? Does he need it with Tony Parker, who I assume is the leader of that team in the sense, the veteran leader, still around? Tony, as far as I know, is playing and coming back. Does he need it with both of those? Is it got to be a three way? I don't know. Because once again, I'll repeat what I keep saying, that whoever gets him, if he's going to be traded, the GM has to sit down, and the first question would be, why are we even having this conversation?
Yeah,
you know, what is it? What is your problem?
Actually, I think the first thing that person will say is, can you please walk across the room and then turn around and walk back? I want to see if you're ambulatory, there is a reason. There got to be some reason that he is not seen anywhere working out or any of this stuff. One of the stories they wrote today, they were joking around that just send us an Instagram of him like taking a shot, just so that we can actually see that he's alive, he has all his limbs, and he's okay, because this is the mystery that he's become physically.
It's amazing now he's absented himself from the process and from the world in this age of social media, where so much else is transparent.
He's the Marlena Dietrich, not this guy, of the NBA now.
I want to be alone. The goggle, yes.
Who knew?
Well, we knew he was quiet, and we knew he didn't say a whole lot, but this is taking it to a new level.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, hey, speaking of the summer league, Mitch, there's some activity going on out there of some interest to basketball diehards in terms of the youngins. And Trey Young, speaking of youngs, has had a very tumultuous beginning into his professional career, would you not say?
Yeah. I don't put a lot of stock in the summer league stuff, because I remember we had a couple guys with the Pistons here who had these amazing summer league performances, averaging 30 points a game. And so, first of all, when the team scores 180 a game, you know, averaging 30 isn't what it is in the regular season. But then they end up being, you know, big nothings. But the fights, you know, and the hot tempered stuff, like Trae Young and Grayson Allen getting into an altercation.
Wait a minute, you said Grayson Allen and some kind of contretemps?
Yeah, I can't believe that, because he's normally so even tempered. Yeah,
now that is interesting.
I do find Grayson Allen playing with Utah a little bit odd, you know, because you think of Utah, of all the teams in the league, as sort of the more gentlemanly. I don't know if that's true.
That his coach is a fellow Dukie and was a feisty guy himself. Although no one in recent times in college basketball pulled the shenanigans that Grayson Allen did, or developed the type of reputation that he did in his at least through his junior year. But I don't know. There's a Dukie kind of solidarity going on there, maybe a little bit.
Well, Trae Young has a lot to prove, obviously, and feels that he can, you know, feels that he was slighted, and Grayson Allen just plays as if he has a lot to prove. But it's only, I mean, that's enough. I was going to say it's only going to take one incident for Grayson Allen to start getting the reputation in the NBA that he had in college, which is every time a team comes up and plays against him, they're looking for a dirty play. They're looking for a reason to get into it with him. And he's already done it in summer ball, and that's probably enough. But he'll do it in the NBA at some point, and that'll be the reputation that follows him around. And he can play 20 games in a row and do everything clean. And the 21st game, he's going to stick a leg out, and he's going to continue to have that reputation in the NBA. He won't last, and he won't be protected by Mike Krzyzewski the way that in the NBA that way. I'll tell you that. Guys will know what they're up against.
There's a pick set. There's a pick to be set out there at some point that he'll never forget. You would think. I'm just thinking about it. I'd like to call up Rick Mahorn and say, why don't you go out there and give some pointers to some guys in the NBA about how to set a real pick. I don't have to tell you about Rick Mahorn.
Yeah.
And that might straighten that young man out right quick.
Well, that would knock that young man over. By the way, before we leave basketball, interesting rumor going around that Lonzo Ball, who now is in a position, so interesting how a year changes things. He becomes the number two pick and goes to the Lakers, and everyone's saying he's going to be some kind of savior for the Lakers last year. Now he's in a position of apparently hanging on to being a Laker by, if you believe some of the rumors, leaking information that he's got a knee injury, a torn meniscus that might require surgery, and therefore making teams possibly back off on trading for him because he doesn't want to be traded, because the last vestige of who he thinks he is, and certainly who his father thinks he is an L.A. Laker. You send him out to the hinterland somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and his father doesn't have anything, and neither does he. So I don't know. Do you?
I love this story. Everything about Lonzo. As long as I'm not the one that has to live with you know who, I just love the story, and I just think that his trade value. I've been wondering aloud, what is his marketability based on both factors, based on the oddness and incomplete nature of his game, and the fact that his father is such a pain in the you know what. And I'm thinking that the only way some team's going to trade for him is if LeVar signs up with Elon Musk on a trip to the moon or to the Mars, you know. I just don't know how this is going to play out. It's going to be fascinating, and this story is it just adds to the a twist on the plot. I love it. I don't know. Anything is. Look, first of all, I rule nothing out. I mean, I've lost the capacity for shock. I for the most part, there's only a couple of things left in sport for which I would say, oh my God, I'm truly shocked. There's nothing yet that's happened in this story that would shock me. But I love.
Well, let's
the
remember
idea.
In the NBA. Before a trade is consummated, you have to disclose full medical. You can get in a lot of trouble for trying to hide that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You have to disclose full medical information, and they'll have to undergo a physical. So it's not like they were going to get over on anybody.
Sure.
But in terms of even igniting
hesitancy,
trade talks.
Yeah. Well, if the idea
yeah,
he
you
wants
know, like,
to
well, we're not even going to begin a talk there if you're going to throw Lonzo Ball's name in. And isn't it weird that could be the position that Lonzo Ball, the thing that could keep him a Laker would be an injury that keeps him from playing. And what is this kid's future? You know, he does his game and LeBron James's current game. Again, I don't know if they're planning on changing LeBron James's game or LeBron is planning on it. Don't make a whole lot of sense together where roster spots are precious. There are more complementary kinds of players that you want to develop or bring along than Lonzo Ball's, and particularly for a guy who can't shoot. He can rebound, and he can assist, but, is there – again, LeBron James ticks a lot of those boxes. So I'm not sure where he fits in that.
And now they just signed Rondo. So, yeah. I mean – he is, in my mind, he's utterly superfluous for this season. Once again, we have to go back to the beginning of our discussion and what is the Lakers' end game and the one-year contracts and who's going to be around in 2019-20 and Lonzo then could have a renewed value, although even with LeBron, his value has been reduced to me and unless he's going to get a better shot. I'm not saying he can't, but he's got to, but he seems stubborn about it, and they're very, very defensive about the weird shot and doesn't seem to want to and have an inclination to change it. Not that we know.
Well, you're not going to get to be stubborn with those shooting percentages. Nobody will care if you shoot it from behind your back or under your legs if you can shoot 50%.
Right.
But
I
if you're shooting in the 30%, you ain't going to last in the NBA.
Jamal Wilkes had a weird stroke, but it went in. Yeah. So, that can't happen. Tim Hardaway had a – I once called it – when I saw him in in the NBA rookie thing in 1989 in Orlando. I said he's got a motherless child of a jump shot, but here he is as a borderline. But here he is as a borderline Hall of Famer with the same motherless child jump shot. He took it a long way in the NBA. So you know, these things can happen. There's always unorthodoxy that works in any sport, but it's got to work. And right now, Lonzo Ball's preferred style is not working.
Well, by Monday there'll probably be more movement, and we haven't even mentioned DeMarcus Cousins joining the Warriors. And maybe everybody's just figuring, okay, he's with the Warriors. They're all healthy. They're all coming. Forget it. 2019's going to the Warriors. Let's plan for 2020. And maybe that's the thinking that's going on.
First of all, he's got to get healthy. So we don't even know when he's going to play. And then stop me the very first time they throw the ball into him on the low post and ask, and he turns around and shoots it and doesn't throw it back out. I mean, you know, did they really want to introduce this type of player into their mix?
I'm guessing they think that they can make him play their style of basketball.
I mean, he can, and we know he can shoot, and we know he's a modern, a big, and he's not a stretch four, he's a stretch five, and all that. But the fact is that, you know, that what makes him a beast is when he's, you know, separating bodies down low and dunking in your face. Maybe they've decided they want a little of that, because it's been a long time since they threw the ball into a center and asked him to score with any great hope. They could have used him in 2015, the last 3 minutes of the game, instead of cranking up endless threes. But that's another story, and I'll get off the soapbox right now.
All right. Let's switch over to the beautiful game and the country that invented the beautiful game, England. We don't want to get into the half of the quarterfinals that's going on today.
No.
But by the time a lot of people end up hearing this podcast, those games will be played.
Yeah, we will.
So the reason we're not talking about Brazil or Belgium or the other ones on
France
Friday's
and Uruguay
games, which are fantastic games, but they'll all be finished by the time a lot of people hear this. However, tomorrow being Saturday's games, England is fascinating to me. I have watched every minute of them play in the World Cup. I've watched pretty much every minute of the World Cup. And when they went to penalties, which was so classic, I mean so classic, in their round of 16 game, when they thought they had it won and they're sitting there and that late goal, Colombia scores a late goal, and you figure they're just, okay, this is the end. This is the classic England stumbles. They keep a stiff upper lip, be good losers. And instead, their goalie rises to the occasion, and they win on penalty kicks, something they hadn't done the last three times they tried it at the World Cup. And now, there was a lot of talk that if they could get past Colombia, they had the best chance of making it to the final. And they are, I think they are the highest ranked team. Not that that means anything.
No.
Ranked teams have dropped out of this thing all along here. But them taking on Sweden, they're going to be favored. And to be favored in a quarterfinal and to be England, whoa, what a moment in the country that invented the game.
Oh, it's been a while since they've been lots of heartache in that country, failing to advance, and this is the furthest they've advanced in quite a while. And, of course, there's always a specter in 1966, and everybody been talking about Bobby Moore and all that. But they have a real shot. And I think it's interesting, once again, we've talked about this earlier, the vaunted big names of the last 30 years in England all failed at the highest level to get the country, this far. The Beckhams and all that, they call them the Beckham generation, but there are plenty of others, very hallowed English names. And now we have a new crop, led by Harry Kane. Who's he look like, by the way? It's driving me crazy. He's a lookalike.
Some kind of actor. Yeah,
yes, he reminds me of, at the very least, and a lookalike of someone, and it is bugging me. I'm going to get it before this.
Looks a little
cup
bit like, who was that, the actor that played Goose in Top Gun?
I don't know.
All right. Well, Anthony Edwards.
We're begging help from our
with a beard.
Begging help from our vast audience here. That who the hell does that? Tweet us on Sports Reporters.
He does look like he could be in an episode of The Crown.
Yes. Who does Harry
Kane
look like?
An actor kind of face, but
he does. It's not even not athletic a looking face, I tell you the truth. But by the way,
and it's not that athletic a looking body either. You know, but he gets the job done.
You know what? He's a classic.
Inspires it.
He's like Chris Mullin of soccer. He just knows how to play.
Yeah.
How's that one? I'll throw that one out there.
Good call.
Ah,
Chris Mullin of soccer. Wow.
And
pulling the name out of the past.
Just remember that I get full credit. I want attribution, made for me on this one. Now, okay. What I'm getting at there is that they got a young crop and they're getting the job done in a way. And yeah, had they had a more favorable draw? I think the experts say yes. The right side of the bracket was a softer side than the left side. Thus far, they have taken their advantage of it. Now they're playing Sweden. So that's a bit softer opportunity. But
I'll tell you what they won't have in Sweden is they won't have those arguments with the ref from the Swedes. Eminently more polite group than the Colombians.
Well, the Colombia game was a bit of a tussle, I would say. And of course, I sat there and watched it, and I was sitting watching with a gentleman up in Weld, Maine, and a new friend named John Sheffer. And I said, you know damn right well that when this game is over, that the Colombians are going to complain that the American ref was favoring the Brit. And of course, that's exactly what happened.
Of course.
They claim that.
Don't you wonder when you watch this World Cup and you see, especially you see an American ref, and you see these players go over and start screaming, and English is not their native language. What are they screaming at? if they're like the average athlete in terms of studying outside languages, they're not speaking anything fluently other than their own. So, what if they're coming from Uruguay and they're yelling at an American ref, what are they yelling at him for? How long can the discussion go on?
I'll say this.
You're going to use the same three or four words. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. Okay. And then you're done. And not to make a bad joke, but we were watching Colombia, and given the history of what happens to Colombian players if they lose, when we were watching it, and I'm saying, what do you think the Colombians are saying to the ref? It's like, please, you don't understand. You don't understand what this is going to mean. My family, I have children. So you almost saw that kind of pleading going on. That was a great game.
It was a lot of yellows given out to the Colombians, and I think justifiably. The penalty kick was, I'm sure that it didn't have to be called. I think there were referees at times that might not have called that referee, but that penalty.
But Colombia made out, they did get their goal in extra time with 2 minutes left to go.
And it was a beautiful goal. That was like the way you would draw up a set piece from a corner kick and a header rising above the pack and perfectly. It was a textbook. I give them full credit. A beautiful header, a beautiful entry kick from the corner.
Yeah, and 2 minutes away from the end of the game where you then take that momentum into your overtimes and into, perhaps into your penalty kicks. So I don't think that Colombia can complain about their opportunities going into penalty kicks with that momentum behind them. Don't you think they thought they were going to win?
Yeah.
And England, all credit to Gareth Southgate, who was one of those guys who in his past failed at penalty kicks while representing his country. It happened to him. And so he apparently worked the team. This is something that it's a little bit like bunting in Major League Baseball. Did you work on your bunting in spring training? Some teams do and some teams do. Come on, if you don't know how to bunt by now, what's the point? And apparently Southgate has been working the team over and over again, saying penalties are not a crapshoot. Penalties are practice. Penalties are muscle memory. And we've got to do them over and over again. And apparently they were practicing them over and over again, way more than past England teams had, and I give him credit. They delivered in the clutch when they had to. The work paid off, and I also give him credit. I wasn't sure if England could play tightly, given the fact that he had given all his star players the game off in the last game against Belgium. So effectively, they hadn't played in a week or even more than a week together, and that can break your momentum in a tournament where you only play a few times. But here's the reason I'm rooting for England in this thing, and it's not because they speak English. They are the only squad at the World Cup who their entire team plays in England.
Oh, the entire
Sweden,
team.
On the other hand, is not a single player on Sweden plays in Sweden. Now, that's partly because the Swedish league must not be whatever. But even you would think some of the lesser guys or whatever, and they play in some kind of profession. They all play someplace else. They only come back to join for the national effort. All the England players play in England, particularly the Premier League. I like that. You know, they're playing for the country. They labor in their country. They take their country's money during the rest of the year. It's not Ronaldo. It's not Messi. It's not these guys who take off and go play someplace else and then, okay, I'll just come back to win for my squad. And then we don't know that here in America. Our Olympic teams are full of guys who play. You know, our basketball Olympic teams are full of guys who play here in America. But the notion of, like, Ronaldo playing for Portugal when you don't really get a chance to see him except when they're playing their national qualifiers or whatever, that has to be a little weird. So I'm an England guy. I'm rooting for them to go. And I know Mike Lupica, our colleague, is over there in England and watched this game there, and he'll be back with us next week. I want to hear what the reaction was in the pub when that penalty kick went in.
A lot of countries have great backstories that are worthy of our attention and our interest, and we know that what the cup would mean to countries for whom life is not always that great for a lot of its citizens, and all that, as opposed to England, you know, which doesn't have that kind of a image in our mind, and of course I'm conscious of their history, and I mentioned the 1966 thing when it is the birthplace of the sport. The Premiership is a tremendous league and all that. Okay, I want to speak before we leave soccer. I want to talk about one thing. The Harry Kane penalty kick goal fascinated me for the following reason. Now, I am hardly a soccer maven, but we've all been watching a lot of soccer for at least the last 3 weeks, and we've seen a lot of penalty kicks. And the ordinary penalty kick goes one of two ways. There's just no other way about it. The goalie decides which way he's going to guess. He's going to move to his right. He's going to move to his left. If he guesses right, he has a very good chance of making a save. If he guesses incorrectly, he will not make the save. And assuming that the shot isn't wide or low or hit the post, that, by the way, one of the penalty kicks did for Colombia, hit the post, the goal, the crossbar, or else they would have maybe won. Okay. But Harry Kane, do you remember how it went, Mitch? Harry Kane shot it right down
the middle.
Broadway, right down Oxford Street, mate. I've never in my limited soccer experience seen it that way. The goalie, I believe, in this case, moved to his right, and Harry shot it right down Broadway, which I have personally not seen, which I thought was wonderfully fascinating, and I just don't know, you know, if it's that rare, and I just don't see enough soccer to know, or whether that was just an ingenious thought in Harry Kane's mind.
Well, given what you just said about the goalie guesses left or guesses right, you would wonder why they wouldn't go down the middle more, because the one place you know he's not going to be if the goalie's moving is the center. You know, and if you can hit it hard enough there, they can't possibly react to go back the other direction. You got a 50-50 chance going left or right, but you would think the middle would be more open. I remember watching that now, and I'm actually more surprised that more guys don't do that.
Me too. That's what I thought. I said, why don't we see this more often? Yeah. And again, I'm leaving it to the soccer experts to tell me why, because it seems so logical when all we ever see is goalies darting right or left, making a calculated guess, and maybe based on scouting report, maybe not. And now, by the way, the Brit 10 goalkeeper said he has known the tendency of the final fellow, Falcao, I think his name was, who he stopped that secured the victory, you know, prior to the winning kick. But, I mean, he said he knew the scouting report, and he went left, and the guy did kick that way. So he went to his left. So I don't know.
Wonder if these guys have the same way that pitchers and catchers go over the scouting report of, you know, who likes to go after a fastball and who's a sucker for a curveball. And, you know, in baseball, I mean, it's so analytical. It's a little bit like those movies where the robots look at people and all the information comes up in their eyes, you know, and all the data, something out of the Matrix. You wonder if they have that broken down on penalty kicks for every single team and every single guy. That would be remarkable. We'll see if Russia and Croatia goes to penalty kicks. Russia, conversely, while England has earned its victories, albeit against, you know, maybe not the toughest competition, Russia really didn't face anybody in the qualifying rounds. They had the easiest draw, I thought, and you kept watching them and saying, oh, come on, how lucky could they get, and then they play against Spain, and in a game that they absolutely had no business winning, they beat Spain, and now they're up against Croatia, and I'm not picking against Russia anymore. I mean, I don't know if Putin's doing something to the water or it's just at home field thing, but I mean, I think they came into this thing as the 70th ranked team in the world, And look how far they've gotten in the World Cup already.
Well, home field and home crowds and all that, but I'm giving them full credit for taking advantage of this opportunity. You're right, they were by far the lowest rated team, a ranked team coming into the tournament. They're only in it because of the home country, and they've enjoyed tremendous success so far. It's been a success for them so far. They talk about house money kind of thing. They're getting, obviously getting great support. It's all part of, I think it's been a wonderful cup, and I really enjoyed it immensely, and there's so many teams. I'll be perfectly fine if they win. I would like England to win, but there are plenty of others. I think it'd be perfectly fine if they win. For example, a Uruguay, who are the original winners. They actually did win it a second time too, but they're not a big country. That would be just unimaginably cool if they ever won.
Yeah. Croatia's got a pretty good player too, Luka Modric, who's is a really, he could be as good a guy who's going in the sport in the World Cup as anybody here, him or Harry Kane. Finally, before we close out, we talk about England. There is a little tennis tournament going on over there, and it's working out fairly well so far for Serena Williams, in that by the time she actually has to play ranked players, there may not be ranked players left.
Dropping. What do we have, six of the first eight or top eight are gone already?
Yeah, six of the top eight, and it was in the first 4 or 5 days of the tournament. That's pretty interesting. She won't face any seed before the semifinals at the earliest. That's if there aren't any more upsets. So her comeback from her pregnancy, this could be the time where, I think in its own way, there'll be detractors if she wins it saying, well, who did she play? But, at her age and taking off time to have a baby and then coming back, it's going to rank as a pretty remarkable feat.
Won't hear a discouraging word out of me if she winds up winning this thing based it would only completely cement the legend for all time. There would be no more discussion and of all the greats, who's the greatest woman that's ever picked up a racket. And that there probably shouldn't be already, but there certainly couldn't be if she ever won this tournament.
apparently they're calling her Mrs. Williams now at Wimbledon.
She's freaked out by that she didn't. First of all, she's not Mrs. Williams. She's Mrs. whatever her husband's name is.
Well, if you really want to, if you have to insist on the Mrs., then I guess she should be Mrs. Ohanian.
Ohanian, right?
Yeah.
She's Mrs. Ohanian.
Yeah. Oh, well. But the umpires are calling her Mrs. Williams.
I know.
She's marital status. Right. It's like the New York Times, do they still do that anymore where they still refer to Miss or Mrs.
I don't
know.
First
name.
I just.
But as
I
we were coming up, that was the only paper that you.
I always
use
cite
the first
them
name.
And their stuffy nature back in the old days. They have changed, but when in the height of the UCLA reign over college basketball, every reference to UCLA was as follows. The first one would be the University of California, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then only in subsequent references, and they would put the periods in. U. C. L. A. That you were not allowed to simply casually and cavalierly refer to that school as UCLA without proper designation.
Right. Well, I remember
that was the old days at a time
when Chris Everett was playing at Wimbledon, and she was listed as Miss C. M. Everett. And then when she married John Lloyd, and I was covering Wimbledon back then when she was married, and she was. Mrs. J. Whatever it was, Lloyd. Lloyd won? Who's Lloyd that won? If you go back and look it up, that's who. You're going to say somebody named Mrs. J. M. Lloyd won Wimbledon. I guess they have changed because it's at least Mrs. Williams. At least she gets to be identified with her own name. But I think it'll be remarkable. I mean, her story is already remarkable, but to come back on this, if she does it in the second week, will be a pretty amazing story. All right, before we get to our parting shots, let me tell you that today's episode of the Sports Reporters Podcast is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. And, they say soccer is the football of the rest of the world. Only soccer's championships last an entire month. Now we're talking, and there's no better place to spend that month watching these great games than at Buffalo Wild Wings. Get into B-Dubs, where they've got match day select domestic beer specials. I like that. You match up your England beer with your Swedish beer. Mm. And a special sauce mashup to go with the already loaded roster of 21 sauces and seasonings. That's enough combinations for a full month worth of delicious cheering. Catch all the soccer action at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports, offers vary by location. Time for our parting shots. Bob, why don't you lead off?
You know, Mitch, there's incessant talk these days about the lack of action in baseball. Too many Ks, not enough knocks. Hey, I won't argue that. But allow me to put in a word about defense. Now, hear me out. We are in the golden age of defense, regardless of how many balls are actually put into play. For some time now, it should have been evident that we are in a golden age of shortstops, for sure. Defensive shortstops who can really pick it. But what fascinates me more right now are the great defensive outfielders we have. Now, I grew up in the 50s. You know, Mickey, Willie, and the Duke. Plus, Ashburn, Bell, and a little remembered whiz named Bobby Del Greco. You remember Bobby Del Greco, Mitch?
Yeah.
Now, just about every day or night, a Bradley Jr., Kiermaier, Millar, Buxton, or Braxton is making a miraculous catch in center field. And there's plenty more going on in the other fields in both leagues. Please pay attention. In at least one way, baseball has never been better.
Once a year on 4th of July, the world's best gather to match their skills at a single sport. It involves no running, no kicking, no jumping, no hitting. You don't need size, you don't need strength. Yet, it is considered a sport and even covered on the sports pages. I'm talking about the annual World Hot Dog Eating Contest, which is held at Coney Island, naturally, and which was won this year, once again, by the unfortunately named Joey Chestnut. For a guy who wins this thing more often than Steph Curry wins titles, you'd think he'd be named Joey Mustard, Joey Buns, Joey Wiener. But no, the man with the name a squirrel would envy once again out-ate all his competitors, downing 74 hot dogs, a new world record. Now, that's the part I don't get. How do you actually get better at this sport? Wouldn't you think whatever your capacity to eat is your capacity to eat? But no, Chestnut won with 70 hot dogs 2 years ago, 72 last year, 74 this year. What's he doing? Practicing more? I would wonder if he was on steroids, but one look at him tells you otherwise. All I know is, like every other sport, the records keep falling in hot dog eating. It may lack every single other element of competition, but at least it's the one place on the sports page where we don't have to hear about LeBron James. That's going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We thank you for sitting in with us on this Friday. We do this every Friday and Monday, so we'll be back in a few days. And lots to talk about then, I'm sure, with the World Cup and Wimbledon advancing. If you like what you heard, please leave us a comment. If you don't, please leave us a comment. We enjoy hearing from you either way. Tell your friends they can get this podcast anywhere they get popular podcasts. And if they enjoyed the Sports Reporters TV show on ESPN all those years, it's the same group. Just doing it podcast style. Until we see you on Monday, on behalf of Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great holiday weekend.
Harry Kane, who's he look like?